Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SCP Online, Dead Come Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just to remind you how to join us, we have Talkcast every Thursday starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either watch this stream live on the Starfleet Universe Online Discord server. Just join the SFU On Call stream voice channel, and you can find the invite for that Discord server on the sfuoncall.com website. Just go right there. It's on the main page. And, of course, if you want to join us and chat, you can go to twitch.tv. Yeah, just twitch.tv/sfuoncall. You can join us there. You can watch the live video stream of it right there. I only do audio on the Discord server. I do video on the Twitch server. And of course, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you can follow me on Twitter, you can call me sfuoncall. Well, my personal account, which is Paul Franz. PaulFranz, there's no T in that. And Franz Games, which is my business account, FranzGames. Again, there's no T in that. And of course, I'm also on Blue Sky. You got FranzGames.com, which is my personal slash business account, and also the sfuoncall.bsky.social, which is my podcasting account. And of course, the lovely Talkcast gets turned up podcast available on iTunes and various other streams around the net. Not much work got done when it comes to ADB this week, but because of illness and also, including Steve Petrick going into the hospital. He's now out of the hospital and should be able to work starting tomorrow. He wanted to start working today, but no one could get him there. So this week, found on online store is the F&E counter sheet number 6. It's only $4, and it's a sheet of 140 special double-sided counters for the Minor Empires module. Sorry. Moving on to the SCP Online tournaments, we have the Sapphire Star 19 tournament, which slams are closed. Sorry. Play has started. We have two games that are completed. We have at least another three or four games which are started or they're working towards getting started. The biggest issue, of course, is Jeff Clark. Jeff Clark is located in Japan. Therefore, you have to work with him. Usually that means you're playing at night and he's playing in the morning. In Japan, I've played against them, so I know how that whole thing works. So hopefully we'll get those done quickly because I only want to give them another 2 weeks. I need to email them out and remind them that, hey, you only got 2 weeks left. Also, the 500 BP tournament, the survey is completed and hopefully we'll be starting soon. There still was some discussion via email, and also as one of the topics for this evening. When it comes to the Starfleet Warlord, games number G97 is going well. We have one player die. They got their corporation is dead. Die Hard 58 and 59 are going well. Die Hard 58, the five players are gone. That means either they left or they actually they're dead. And 59 is going well, very well. All players are still in that game. So it should be, hopefully the turns are going well. And hopefully we can keep the game rolling at a good pace. When it comes to the library report, not much happened there. Apologize, I finally recovered from the weekend, and I should be able. I have some time this weekend to work on some of the library and getting it updated. I'm hoping to be able to do some of that this weekend. So with that, before I forget, and I apologize, I almost forgot, which is that there will be no podcast next weekend, no videos next week. Because I will be on vacation. So I'll be enjoying myself doing some camping and up north in Lycoming County of Pennsylvania. So with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, yes, the one and only Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight we have Doug. Say hi, Doug.
Hi, Doug.
And we have me.
Hi.
And that's about it for this evening, at least the people that actually are here. And forgot my stream manager so I can see what the world's going on. So I can go so click on people and go, you're banned. Obviously, if you want to join us in the Twitch chat room, feel free. It's twitch.tv/SFUOnCall for those of you who are listening to this after the fact. Obviously, if you're already in the Twitch channel, you already know. So, anyhow, tonight I was going to talk about the survey results of the 500 BPV survey. And some replies to those results, which Jeff replied to them, but I hadn't had a chance to actually look at the responses. So I'm just going to leave it as I understood it. I think yesterday or a couple of days ago, I forget which. It's been a little while. So. What I'm going to do is I'm going to switch over to that email. Okay. Don't mind me. And I'm going to switch over so you can see the email. By Jeff Clark. He said, what the format would you prefer? And you got 45% of the people said single elimination and 36 for the respondents said round robin. And I feel like to me, I just read this a little bit earlier, the data meds medicine. And I agree on this point, which is we kind of would like a round robin. Here's the problem. I particularly said no, and Dana said no. He said it went about a single elimination, just for plain simple reason, a length of time, because it takes so long for it to get a single game done. You know, as I pointed out earlier when we were talking about the actual survey, that, you know, it really, for us, we don't want... The problem with any tournament, and I know, Doug, you'll agree with this, especially online tournaments, that is that the longer they go, the more you're going to have people drop off. And even one thing which Jeff is suggesting here, Jeff is suggesting a Commanders plus CXO model. That is, each fleet has two people. Now, obviously, what that means two things to me. The problem with the Commander XL model, in my mind, is one, that means you have a small number of people a smaller number of fleets that can compete, because you can't have a commander, you know, your XL can't also be a commander of their own fleet. You know, that doesn't work. So this means less for the Commander XO model. That means less fleets that will be played. But you actually should have an opportunity, as pointed here, which is that the Commander XO model is nice in that you can actually have one or the other player playing, which is. I think a good thing of that. In other words, it should be able to keep the actual tournament going, when it comes to the games themselves, going at a good pace. You know, they should be able to get together more often. If you just easily transfer the games back and forth, and that should be easy enough to do for people. Do you play prefer to expand the empires available. Basically, a lot of people said got 6 out of 11 said Andromedans. Second was, you know, about with 5 people, which was none. So they're to plan on having the Andromedans. Now I'll get to that.
I wonder who said let's put the Andromedans in.
Well, I did, and I did not vote. I did not fill out the survey 6 times. Okay, just to let you know, I did not cheat. I did not tip my hand and say, you know, come on, everybody, let's all play Andromedans.
No one said you did.
See, here's the thing is, which I and Jeff replied to these guys, which is both Frank and Ted both say, you know, no Andros. But here's the thing. When it comes to Ted Faye said, oh, they break RPS tech matchups. I disagree, because I really feel like the Andromedan fleet versus a Alpha fleet is the difference there when it comes to fleet games is that the Andromedans have their own issues. They can't, unlike in the tournament, they can't fly nearly as fast as they can in the tournament. Trust me, I've flown them. It's when it comes to the mothership can't go that fast, and you can't have your satellite ships go that fast if you want to take advantage of actually slowing it down so that they actually can be transported into the ship, because they have to be at going speed 10 to actually come back into the mothership. So I disagree, and I apologize for knocking on the mic because I'm sure you heard that. Oh, should we expand the fleet? Overwhelmingly, people said no, and I was one of those people that agreed. I didn't want it to really expand. Jeff said they might give a little more commander's options to up to 575 PPV, which is 15%. Which is okay. I can see that. You know, get more Lord toys. That's fine. But the thing is, overall, do you prefer to use the EW and Scout? Overwhelming, yes. 10 people in the survey results all said yes.
Wow. Okay.
And Ted Faye said, yeah, not only yes, but absolutely yes. Scouts are a very interesting part of the game and really add tactical depth. And same for Frank. He also said a definitive yes. Now, again, I'm not sure if that's part, these two guys, Ted and Frank, if those had already replied in the survey, so their answers are already in the results, you know.
Well, if 10 people out of 10 people said yeah, then...
Yeah, I think it's kind of obvious.
I think it's a pretty good chance.
When it comes to that one result, yeah, agreed. But, you know, when you have the Andromedans and you have the size of the fleet, those are two that is this the DC? Frank would like a fleet of a larger fleet, the 600 plus 20% commanders option. And Ted would like to have it up to 750. Now, again, as I mentioned before, when it comes to the size of the fleets, Dana also said they would actually like to have, they like large fleets. Problem, again, as Dana pointed out, which is the problem with large fleets is they're large fleets, which means it takes longer for those games to complete. Next key, which was, shall we allow a conjectural prototype or other non-standard? Pretty good margin. I said no. That's 7 people, and so we'll not permit conjectural prototype or other non standard units, which is fine. Now, the fighters, what's interesting, hydrogen may use fighters, carriers got, but what about other races? I disagree with six people, agree with five, so it's mixed. So basically, it's like only a little more than 50%, just like back in the Andromedans. So basically, he's planning to let the Hydrans have as many fighters as they want, basically like 24. And Feds might get more fighters since they get like 12, since they lack PFs, which again, I don't like. Outside of the Hydrants, I really don't like fighters when it comes to seeking weapons, as I talked about before. Otherwise, it'll be limited to eight. So, a light carrier with an escort will provide pretty much strong defense, drone defense, if you're concerned. I am concerned about the drones. Learners may use PFs, tenders, and so forth. What about other races? Agree to a seven, disagree with four. So, players seem to be more open to PFs. And yeah, I can see that. Instead, it will permit learners to have six PFs in a form of flotilla. In other words, they don't have to be the casual flotilla of adding PFs onto ships. Just via the
Links.
tractor beams with the PF hookups.
Yeah, the links.
Links, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And if they want to, an actual PF tender, if you want. And other races will be permitted to take a couple of four casual PFs. And year in service with PFs for all races will be harmonized so Gorns and Romulans can take casual PFs, just like the Zinnies and the Hydrans. Now, map size. This was interesting. Eight agreed to go to shrink the map. Disagree with three. So basically, we'll be shrinking the map. Average preferred size in the communication and comments was 3,122 hexes. So we're talking basically a 48 by 66 hexes. So not down to the 30 by 42, but it's just a slight bit larger. Like it looks like a 1.5, basically. It's having double the map, 1.5 each way. Obviously, it makes three times the amount of number of hexes, which is always interesting about doing that kind of multiplication. And there's a cost, CL 15 format was open space. Are you favorite in adding terrain? Overwhelmingly disagree with nine people versus two people. And he talks about that we might develop an admiral's role to maneuver. I'm not sure who would roll. That might be the GM, I would think. So basically, people prefer open space and don't want terrain. I personally want terrain, but as we went through the survey previously, you know my opinions on that. Both,
It could be interesting in a campaign, but
right.
for this, it could be too detrimental for some. Oh.
Well, and as Ted Faye pointed out, it's like the no terrain. Terrain breaks RPS issues, and Lord knows we can't break the RPS. Jeez. It harms some empires more than others, particular plasma with lock-on breaks. Depends. That all depends on the size of the terrain and what kind of terrains it is.
Yeah, but it's such a huge extra variable.
Right. Understood. Understood.
And you've got a thing that's going to take forever as it is, so.
Right. Oh, understood. Understood. I see that with Dana, he said he prefer, as I mentioned, he preferred a round robin, but like a battle. It's like magical, but again, that's why he said no. Just reiterating that. Jeff talks about the concept of the round robin and what would be this thing rather than each and every other league playing once, a true round robin. You are just randomly matched up with opponents and you got a certain number of weeks to play. You score a baseline number of points just to show up and participate. Turns completed. And then, of course, you score points, damage, destroy, and force disengagements per normal VP rules. Victory. Point. If someone cannot play due to real-life issues, the person who is left hanging scores some points, something around disengagement of all the opponent's forces, and so forth. But my saying the BBS is down. My guess the BBS is up. You just have to fix the protocol. It's always a fun thing. I won't do the BBS. And I was like, Matt, really? Yeah, because...
What's he saying? It's kind of hard for me to see the text on this.
Sorry. Yeah, I know it's really small.
But what's he basically summarized?
He just says he won't do the BBS. And my only issue with not, quote unquote, doing the BBS, i.e. they won't respond or post on the BBS. And where do you expect to have conversations? Because the issue with email as a medium for conversations when it comes to a group of people, that's fine if you're going to be very insular. But if you actually want to have people outside of your little group to see the discussion, to have openness and actually have an opportunity to maybe draw other people in, email is a really bad format. You know?
Well, yeah. Yeah, you really should do it on a BBS type of thing.
Right.
If you want to have it as an open thing where other people can chime in, yeah.
Yep, exactly.
I totally agree with you on that. I mean, yeah.
Oh, I know. I understand that. I understand people's issues with Facebook. I understand some people's issues possibly with Discord. But the BBS, really? You know...
Well, the only issue there is I could see some people maybe having an issue with, like, the casual coming in or the person not invested throwing gas on the fire and stuff like that. But on the other hand...
Oh, they'll throw on the fire. They'll be kicked out.
Yeah, but the other hand is, like, I can't see why not if you want to discuss... something and you want it to grow, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to get other people in on it, you know, just the fact that there's some kind of a discussion there about it for those interested enough to go look it up.
Right.
But I couldn't see just confining that to, you know, to literally an email chain. You know, I mean, if it's like one or two buddies, maybe, but it's like if you want a group of people, no. Seriously, you need to have that on a BBS where people can go look things up.
Was it Greg? Yeah, Greg Flush is, you know, oh, well, why don't we have a Coalition versus Alliance kind of thing? It's like, no. You know.
So now that your survey's over, I have a random thought for you.
Shoot.
Aside from tournaments, have you ever considered, like, just running special events? Like, you know, we're going to run mini campaign X. And whoever wants to participate, well, here's your assigned part of the participation.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are other campaigns that are running, like... Frank's AB2 campaign. I if there's any others running at the moment. The problem is that, you know, they're pretty hidden. when it comes to, getting people involved in the tournament and know what the status of, sorry, tournament. I meant campaign. And overall, what campaigns are being run. Obviously I would love to have people more open about campaigns and and so forth. Not sure there's anything I can do about that. Except for, obviously encourage people, especially given that if they can be more open about it, then I can possibly point people towards their campaign. Especially in the when they sign up for SAP Online, okay, you want to be involved in a campaign, instead of sitting around, and hoping to get someone to play, the game to play. Hey, join this campaign. You can be a captain in the campaign and help them complete the number of games that they have to complete for that campaign turn. So, who was it? Who? There was this one campaign which I kind of liked, which basically it was, who ran it? It wasn't Aaron. It wasn't Alien. Aaron Staley. Aaron Staley had the Void War campaign, which didn't turn out so good just because of he wanted it to complete in a certain, at a certain speed, and that doesn't quite work when you actually want it to be resolved using actual SAP ships. It was another campaign, but basically you were going through warp holes between, you'd go to this one system and then you have warp connections to other places where then you might meet up with other fleets combat, and there are certain rules when it comes to if you defeated the person and so forth. I think you might have owned that particular spot and so forth. But no one knew how each system, how the warp ports connected to the systems. It was kind of one of those things that you had to figure out, hit the kind of map and so forth, which overall I like that idea of having to run from point A to point B and so forth and discovering how things are connected. That's kind of, as I said, that's kind of those neat things when it comes to Starfleet Warlord, that each sector, you don't know what's in that sector until you go visit it, and then you can do a scan of it. So it makes things a lot more in, oops, inter oops, interesting. Sorry. Oh, come on. All right, I just wanted check the score. Yes, the Yankees are beating the Red Sox, and I'm not happy. Don't mind me. If I look down my watch, you'll see it. Right now, the bottom of six, the Yankees are winning 4-0. I got a bad feeling that the Yankees might go on to the next round. Grumble, grumble.
Oh. Well, that's what they get paid to do. I mean,
Yeah, they get paid to play. And I said, and
exactly.
the thing is, I was watching the inning of the Red Sox's fall, and basically the problem is that the pitcher, I don't know what it was. I think the problem is that the pitcher just, he seemed like he didn't have much action on his pitches. So this one after the other, the Yankees kept on getting another hit, another hit, another hit, another hit, another hit. And that's why they scored four runs in the one inning. And then they got a reliever in to shut it all down. Which my guess is, think the manager's Cora. Yeah, that's right. He was hoping that it was a rookie would pull out, and then he wouldn't have to replace him with a reliever. But hey, this is, I think you should have pulled him earlier. Of course, the problem is that to pull him earlier, you also had to have your relievers ready available earlier, and I don't think he had anyone actually moving until he started getting into trouble. And it takes a while for, relievers to warm up. So, anyhow. Bah, bah, bah. Just think for a moment. Obviously, when it comes to Starfleet, this, as I brought up Starfleet Warlord, Starfleet Warlords, have been going good. We got three games going, which is around the pace I want, especially given that one is a standard game. The standard game gets run every single week versus the diehard games, which get run every other week. And that's going well. People enjoying. I'm actually trying something new. I'm not sure if I mentioned this last week or not, or last week. Okay, let me finish this thought first. I'm pretty sure I mentioned it last week that I'm trying something new because I'll have at least one player complain, maybe actually a couple complaining on Facebook, because that's the main group gathering place. There's a few people that are not on Facebook, so I always have to remember them when it comes to communications. But the people complaining that, hey, people keep on getting in their turns late, and it's like, yeah, they do. So I'm trying something new in that. I'm still not re requiring, as in the due date is a dead due date, as in you have to have your orders in by it, or you are skipped. Having not gone that far yet, I'm like first steps, baby steps first, which is I'm changing so that basically in Starfleet Warlord, that I'm planning on sending out reminders that there are turns due on Saturday. I'm sending out a reminder on Friday. I might actually right now, there's at least one person who got confused because of I sent out the reminder and he thought it was the last. The one reminder I send out, which is if you get your turns in late, I send you a reminder, hey, your orders are due, and they're due, that they were due like, oh, today, but I'll give you a leeway until tomorrow, and then I'll have to skip your turn. He got confused by that it's okay, and the only reason in my mind that he got confused is because he didn't read the whole entire email. Let's do something real quick. Which one? Bring up. Was. Let's look at this, which is. Okay. This is what the reminder said. This is a reminder that your turn, in this case, this is Die Hard 59. It's due tomorrow by 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. If you already sent in your turn, thank you. Basically, it's just a reminder that it is due tomorrow versus my normal, hey, it's late. Where is it? Let me just bring it up. And this, which is just a reminder that you need your orders in by tomorrow, and give an actual date and so forth. So I can understand the confusion there, but actually, I probably need to change that message to remind them that if you when it comes to the second one, which is a reminder that key, they're due tomorrow, and if you don't have it in, your turn will be skipped. I probably should change that. That's a little bit. Da, da, da. Okay. No, that's me. Bum, bum, bum. That worked. Should be. There it is. There. But because it's something simple and it. Okay. There. Just a quick little thing.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, Starfleet Warlord, we had a minor issue for 2 turns for Die Hard 59. Because the previous game, we turned off EVs. Sorry, events. So the players could not select their events, and it was and no events were occurring. So in that case, I had there are certain things within the engine I have to turn off or enable, depending upon the thing. I took me 2 turns to figure out to finally get through all those settings. And in the meantime, I had to run two of the events, special events, by hand, which is always problematic. It worked out pretty well, pretty well. Well, just okay, for those of you who play Starfleet Warlord, just a reminder, that is, there is no such thing as can you r correct the issue and rerun my turn? No, I cannot. There is no
So
way
if you
to.
make an error, you're done.
Well, no.
It's in there.
No.
Is that it?
Well, actually, okay. When it comes to Warlord, there's two things. There's GM related error, and then there's player related error. Player related error, 9 times out of 10, possibly even 99 out of 100, I will not change it because it was your mistake, not mine,
Right.
your mistake. And
Oh.
I expect that you've read the rules and so forth.
Oh, okie
But if it's a GM mistake, which happens every once in a while, in that I might, especially for those people who basically hand me their orders and say, hey, I want you to enter my orders, which obviously costs you more, but invariably I will enter in a order incorrectly. That happens. And when it comes to GM
Oops.
orders, what I again I cannot rerun that turn with the correction in place. I can't even. If I happen to back it up at the beginning of the turn, I might be able to rerun everybody's turns, but I'm not going to do that for a single player. The only time that I might do that is in the case of one thing which I did not realize, which is that order matters a lot for people in Starfleet Warlord. And I accidentally ran something out of order, and I got two people got upset so much so that I had to restart the whole game all over again. And I had to basically give people free turns for the first 3 turns because I goofed. Because it was an accident. I missed running that person's turn in the proper place. So, but for those times where I made a mistake, I will be happy to correct things as much as I can do. Realize the one thing about Starfleet Warlord and the way it is currently played, for those of you who are old veterans that have not played in the past 10 to 15 years, i.e., when I have been in charge of running the turns, running the game, there are sometimes I can try to fix things, or sometimes I cannot. I will not be able to correct them to a certain fashion. For example, there is one time I did accidentally type in the wrong position for a ship to go to, and the ship died. But they went to, I think like a variable pulsar, and it destroyed the ship. It's like okay, sorry. So I had to recreate the ship, but if there's hadn't been that. that has some issues, possibly, if there's a fleet conflict that you ran, basically ran into another player without that ship because of it, it basically it died, or you didn't have an encounter because of the ship, the fleet died because I ran it into a pulsar, a variable pulsar. So there's only so much I can fix. That's why I to this day, I encourage as many people as possible to actually enter in the orders themselves. That should resolve some of the issues because the aid will overall does a pretty good job. Not perfect, I'll admit it's not perfect, but pretty good job of verifying your orders and verifying your movements. Now, as anyone who's used the aid knows, the one thing that it does not do and can't do, which is if you're going through a stargate that transports you to another location, the aid doesn't know that. It doesn't know that there's a stargate, you're going into a stargate and then your movement will go to another location. So it will automatically at that point say from when you go from this point to this point, that movement is invalid because of when you moved into that one hex, you got transported to a new location. Now, at that from that new location, when you move, it's a valid move. But the A doesn't know that going on to the next pulse, that movement that looked like to the A that's a bad that it's an illegal move, is a legal move. So just a reminder when it comes to aid, it is there to help you. And obviously, if you have any questions, please feel free to give me an email. I'm doing my best to improve how I've worked with the email within context of Starfleet Warlord, because in the past, I did overall not good. And I'm trying to improve. And that was previously I leave all of the un the orders that got the turns that got sent to me in my inbox and then sort them at on Saturday and basically on Saturday when I when I'm actually going to be processing them instead of going through the email trying to keep up to date trying to keep up with the emails during the week. I'm trying to do that now. I've actually got now a mail folder for each game, which is basically called Got 'em, which is basically if I get a turn during the week, I will then take that email and put it in the Got 'em folder for that game. So I can then filter out everything that's not actually a game turn, the actual order for that turn, put them off to the side. And so I can more easily see any questions or any problems that you have in our current game or have a question about the game itself. Which just reminds me of there's an new slash old guy, veteran. Veteran as in he's played the game before. And that is he had in his brain, I don't know why he had this in the brain. Maybe he should have actually reviewed the rules. There's
Oh
something
man.
called in Starfleet Warlord called a logistics base. Well, a logistics base actually is a unit. Now, for some reason, I'm not sure this might have been like this in the past, and he just remembered that. Because I don't know how the rules were different in the past. I don't. I know what they were as of what Bruce Gall gave me the rules that here, this is your these are the rules. And that is that he thought you need to put a logistics base on a site before you can fortify it. No, that's not the case. A logistics base is a unit that cannot be on a site. If there's a site, minor or major site, you cannot put a logistics base there. It has to be basically an empty hex, or at the very least, has to have an empty point terrain. Empty space as the point terrain. And with that empty space at the point terrain, you can add it there. Or obviously if it's empty as in empty space, empty but I'm sorry, empty space in both point and area terrain. So you can put logistics base. Well, he got confused about that. And I was able to explain to him that, okay, according to the rules, and I quoted the rules, that you can't put a logistics base any place where there's a site, and that includes those. I'm sorry, can't have anywhere where there's point terrain, including those that are minor are basically sites themselves. So, that was that problem. And then he asked me about the fortifying the site. I said, yeah, you can fortify any minor or major site. You just fortify it, using the fortify site command, FS or FA, which is fortify all, which is interesting. It's an interesting command in Starfleet War, just because of fortify all gives you basically a way of fortifying a lot of sites at one time, but it's not, you can't just select, oh, this, but you can put some parameters on it so that it only fortifies some of the sites and not all the sites. So, it's a neat command, and it can save you if you want to fortify a lot of sites at one time.
So, just out of curiosity,
Shoot.
are we done with the survey?
Yes.
Okay, just making sure.
That's why I
So
went
you
on.
covered all the stuff in the survey.
Yep, that's why I went off to Starfleet Warlord, because that's one thing I did have a. I've heard some complaints about from Starfleet Warlord community that I don't talk about Starfleet Warlord. I figured
Okay.
I sometimes I talk about Starfleet Warlord. And that's one thing I have been doing for those of you who haven't noticed, which is I've been trying to introduce, at least as part of the news section, a update on Starfleet Warlord with every single week that I have a news portion, so that you can so the Starfleet Warlord is not completely hidden. Obviously, another game that you don't hear much about, of course, which is Federation Empire. I don't play it. Most people play Federation Empire. If they play it online, they play it using Cyberboard, which is a Windows app that you can trade back and forth that, which is kind of cool. I've seen it. It looks kind of neat. I don't think there's any vassal things for that. But
You
again,
know,
you won't hear me talk about that very much. Just like Starfleet Battle Force. I rarely talk about that, but of course, I don't think the when it comes to size of game, people who play the games, I think Starfleet Battle Force is probably one of the smaller ones, probably smaller than Federation Commander. That's my guess. Course, that'd be interesting to have a tournament of that. That could be done. But yeah, just a reminder, if you have not listened to the news portion, which is I will not be doing a podcast next week. I'm going to be on a vacation. I'm heading up north to a Little Pine State Park up here in Pennsylvania. If you live up near Tioga County or Lacoma, that it? It's not that. It begins with an L. Lacoming? I think it might like Lacoming or Lacoma.
Lycoming,
Lacoming, I think it's like.
Lycoim.
Yeah, Lacoming County. That's where you'll find me. So if you want to stop by, you can find me. I really originally wanted to go all the way out to Kettle Creek State Park, which is farther west and farther north. But I couldn't find a good camping spot. They have what's called the only one that's available at Kettle Creek is what they call rustic. To those of you who don't know what that term means when it comes to camping, at least for that campground, Well, camp, but the camp, rustic means is that, okay, you've got your power, you can get power, you can get electric. There's
Oh,
no
man.
outside facilities for showering or the bathroom. So if you have an RV or a travel trailer that actually has a bathroom, you're good. If you don't, you better have a portable porta potty. In theory, I could get, but I'm not quite
Hey, there's
sure.
always the hardware store. Go get your shovel.
I don't think I can do that at the campground. But I understood. Actually, I do have a trowel. I do have a trowel, which I keep in my camping pack, as an emergency kind of thing. That if you need to, you can dig a hole and you can poop in the hole. That kind of thing. Like to avoid that if at all possible. But anyhow, because all the more modern ones, they're all taken for the week. It's like, you gotta be kidding me. I really wanted to go there. Just the one campground is, I like the campground, it's really nice. In that you can park your trailer like right next, you can have it so that you park your trailer, walk out of your trailer, and boom, you're right there at the river, which is awesome. And for those of you, I'm sorry, for those of you who don't live in the Northeast, or like our Midwest and western part of the United States, I'm sorry, unlike the Midwest and the western part of the United States, when it comes to, there's not when come there's not much BLM land around. The whole idea of boondocking is in short supply. Most places that you camp are on, in state parks or are privately owned park campgrounds. Personally, I don't like the privately owned campgrounds. They're fine if what you want to do is have a nice trailer, bring it, and then have. There's some trail parks that they're really great because you can bring your trailer, park it, and then they have swimming pools and so forth. They got all amenities which are great for a family. But that
It's like
now,
being in a hotel,
right.
except you're the hotel.
Exactly. Honestly, I don't like that. I mean, if I'm camping, I want to be camping. I want to go out in the woods. I want to hike. I want to be exposed to, well, actually, the one good thing actually about Little Pine, which we found, and actually I before I got online, the reason why I was running a little late today, I shouldn't have done this, but I did it anyway. Which was, I got sucked into the rabbit hole of Little Pine State Park, their map. Because I remembered the one time, the first time we went there, we were driving around just checking out everything. And they actually have archery targets. They have a whole archery range there. It's like, where is this? I looked at the map covers, I can't find it. Then I found it. It's like, oh, there's the archery range right there. Okay, cool. Which means if I want to, I can bring my bow and shoot some arrows. Hopefully I won't lose any arrows. That's the biggest problem with outdoor ranges. I have a tendency of losing arrows. And arrows aren't cheap. Now, some are cheaper than others. I've got these, actually they're in here. They're in this thing. It's a survival bow. It's completely metal. It's like 400 pounds for draw weight. But what they have is what are called take down arrows. Basically, you can separate them and have them so that they only take up like this much space. They're nice and thin. They're nice. Problem, they're $20 for a single arrow. That
Wow.
ain't cheap.
No, that's made for people with disposable income.
Those are people who like portability more than they like money.
Yeah, disposable income. Very much, very much
The
so.
arrow isn't that expensive. The bow is not that expensive. I forget how much. I think it was like 200. So it's not too much. For a bow, phew, That was one thing. Who,
You know,
what?
I've actually considered that as a hobby. I've considered the possibility. Every great once in a while, I get this hankering to like set up a wood shop and like make bows and arrows,
Yep. Be
just to
careful.
do it.
Be careful. There's a guy, Kramer. He stopped making these videos on YouTube, but he made them for years. And actually has a book that you can get that shows you how to make bows. You know, and this is a guy who made bows back when in his younger years, like 14, you know. The first bow he made sucked, you know. But he did this purely out of passion for doing it. Didn't have all the He had barely the tools. The tools he used were kind of rough, but he was able to do it with the tools he had. You know, obviously there, later on, you know, now he's got a little more disposable income. He's able to get all the good and the nice tools that he can use to more quickly create a bow. But you know, and he's made a lot of videos on that. And so if once you can do that. Actually, I bought his book just because I want to read about how to make a bow. I don't plan on ever making a bow myself because I don't think I have the skill to do it. Because the biggest thing for me, yes, this is Archery Today with Paul. And that is right. This is the scary part right here. Right here. The handle, where you actually hold it. That is the scariest part for me. My biggest concern. Give me a sec here. There. I got a couple of hooks on the wall so I can hang it up. But my biggest concern is that I will not create the proper form. You know, and that if I screw up the riser, you know, I gotta start all over again if you screw up that part. If you make it too thin, if you don't make it smooth it out so it fits well in your hand, you know, that kind of thing. That's my biggest concern about making bows.
Well, that's what practice is for.
Understood. And most of the bows, obviously you can make long bows. The one that, okay, this is a takedown bow that I showed you guys. I like takedowns more. When it comes to creating bows, I'd say I would recommend doing a takedown bow myself. And here's the reason why, versus a long bow. Now, if you really have a hankering to make a long bow, make a long bow. Because that's where your passion is, make it. My only concern, again, I'm cautious. You know, if I was to make a bow, I would make it a takedown bow like that. Because here's the one thing. If you screw up the limbs, you can throw the limbs out and you can restart everything, but you might still have a perfectly good riser to hold the limbs. Versus, you know, if you have a long bow, which is all one piece, and you screw up the limb part of it, you are screwed. Gotta throw the whole thing away. It's just kindling at that point, you know. Course, the Kramer did some crazy things, like he made a bow out of skis. Not really good bow, but he made one. It's like the whole idea of can it blend? You know. But definitely, if you want to, you can look for Kramer on YouTube, and it he's great. Da-da-da. These days, he's into like 500 mile long runs. He's been running for the past 4 years, and he's been doing these crazy runs. But to get to that point, he actually, got in shape and so forth. It took him a while to do that. Ba, ba, ba. So, you know, but you know, I actually those videos, I still like to watch his videos about his running. In some cases, it's just nice to see the places where he goes. Because I actually, I there's when it comes to YouTube videos, I'll be right back. When it comes to YouTube videos, the one thing about YouTube video, whoops, cancel. About the YouTube videos I watch, some of them are, a lot of them are about hiking. There's two people that got one was called Where's Wiseman, which also has Teardrop. They're currently doing some showing some videos from they did a cruise, so that's what they're doing now. But before that, they a lot of times they show camping. They actually did go do they boondock on the West Coast. They live in Washington State, which is cool. And the two I watched who do hikes are Nikki Ro Rosenthal and her cousin Sarah something. I forget her last name because she I remember Nikki Rosenthal. Her last name, because of that's part of her shtick in that at the beginning of her intros, she said, "I'm Nikki Rosenthal," while Sarah doesn't never says her name. I remember it from the actual. Berkowitz. That's it, Berkowitz. And they do a lot of hiking, and they live out. Nikki Rosen Deventhal. Sorry, actually it's Deventhal, not Rosenthal. Sorry, Deventhal. She used to live in a car and roam around. Do YouTube videos, and most of those YouTube videos were her hiking, or just are doing daily everyday tasks. Right now she's actually earned enough using YouTube and other formats, other things. So she actually has now a Sprinter van where she lives in. But Sarah, she still lives in her car. And it roams around and so forth. She does other work other than YouTube videos to live off of. And she'll go visit family and stay there and so forth. So she's got a support system in place for that kind of thing. So, and she's Sarah had just graduated from college like 1 to 2 years ago. And she said, she didn't want to get a job right away. So that's why she's doing this. Yeah, nice. I like watching the videos. They're kind of cool. Where is it? Show more. Kramer Emmons. It's bum, bum, bum. I'm gonna do this real quick. For those of you, this is the guy. Kramer Emmons. This one here is a kind of a transition video. I think, let's check. I'm pretty sure that he transitioned. This video here, this is running to the top of Pikes Peak from his house, which took him a while. He doesn't always run. Sometimes when he gets up on like Pikes Peak, he'll actually just kind of fast hike or slow hike. Doesn't have to be actually running the whole time. Yeah,
So
but
basically, he just films going on walkabout,
no, actually does
kind of
runs.
sort of.
There it is, 55 miles. His other YouTube channel, 55 miles, that he's done. Right now, he's only done four videos, but I watched every single one. And they actually now, 55miles.com. Is the it's a brand of product to help blistering and chafing when it comes to running or hiking. Cool products. He originally created Shattered Archery, who because he was really into to archery, and he actually originally partnered with his brother, and now he basically sold his part of the business to his brother, and his brother now owns Shattered Archery himself, and actually I got a bow from them, and which broke after like 10 pulls. Well, it
Really?
happened, and they're more than happy to replace it. Actually, I emailed them back and I went, "Guys, look, I'll send you back the whole thing because that's what you asked me to do. But here's the thing: if you just want to, basically send me back the riser and just with new limbs, I'm perfectly happy with that. I'm not gonna ask for a whole brand new bow. You just give me new limbs and I'll be fine." Actually, I kind of prefer it that way because of one of the things I had to do is on the rest, the arrow rest, had to put some calf, not hide, kind of fur, it still has the fuzziness of it that you put so that when you put the arrow on it, it just slides right off. I already did that. It's like, I don't want to do that again. It was a pain because the double-sided tape, the tape they used. I'm not sure if they used it or the way it was, they made it. But yeah, that was a pain. I didn't want to go through that again. Took me a while to finally figure out how to get the double-sided tape off it. But I did. But anyway. And they said they might them he said, okay. And my assumption is that he's probably gonna do exactly that. Which is I said, great. I think why it broke is twofold. One, I think they sent me the wrong string and I didn't check. Because according to they sent a little card. I'm not sure if I have it. I think the card's like over there or something like that. And that is it uses a 56-inch string. They gave me a 54. So that's more stress on the bow. That's number one. Number two, I'm a 30 versus a 28 when it comes to draw length. So obviously it's going to be put more strain on it. But I think there's also, I think there was actually a flaw. And that's one of the reasons I want, I said, do you want me to send it back? Because in my mind, I would think they'd want it back because they want to see, okay, why did it fail? Because they need to figure out why it failed to know how to prevent that in the on the next bow they make, that kind of thing.
Well, if they if you had the wrong string on it that put too much stress on it, I that pretty much answers the question,
Well,
I
possibly
guess.
it's possible. I'm not an expert, so I want that's why I send it back to them so they can look at it. Yeah, 54 inch for 54 will give it a lot more strain. I agree there, but the question is it too much strain to have it 54 versus 56? I don't
Well,
know.
it did break, so
Yeah,
there you go.
well, that doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean that's the cause. That might be a contributing factor, but anyway. Okay.
It could have been the grain of wood, it could have been anything.
Right, exactly. The question is, was there a flaw in the wood that they went gone went unnoticed? And that's why it broke. And then they could say, okay, here's what happened. I see the here's the crack, that we didn't notice in time, and we actually used that piece of wood for creating the limb, and we shouldn't have done that. And so they actually like this bow that I showed, they do have it is laminated. They have laminated. I don't know. I think it's fiberglass that they put on the outside. The core is I don't know what wood they use in the core, but they laminate on the outside with I think some fiberglass. But anyhow, sorry, went down that rabbit hole pretty fast. That doesn't take me long to actually to do such a goofy thing as going down the archery rabbit hole.
Oh,
There's
look,
a
a squirrel.
yes. Squirrel is running a very 50 miles an hour, and I'm chasing him with a 40 miles an hour motorcycle, So anyhow, I think we'll wrap it up here with that. Again, as a reminder, there will be no podcast next week because I will be gone. I need a break. I need actually a vacation Because I've had a very busy summer. That was something other than a vacation. And
Hey,
I st
while you're
I'm
on
still upset at
vacation,
that
think about
because July was just a.
Gamers of Winter. It's only around the corner.
I know. I didn't believe it or not. I was half tempted. I was like half tempted. And the only reason I didn't do this was because I'm the only person home. I was half tempted to find a camp, a state park near Harrisburg, and bring the trailer and just park it there, and then sleep, just drive to the state park, which would be closer than my house, and then drive and then go back and forth that way, which would be expensive. It's like $30 a night is what usually campgrounds are. But
Doesn't that kind of defeat the purpose? If you're going to drive home.
right. I agree. Well, as I said, I had it as a thought, but then of course there's a big issue for me, which is I was the only person here. I thought two, one, I didn't have my truck, so I had to rent a car that actually had a tow hitch, which would be fine. But then I have the other issue, which is there's five cats I had to take care of. It's another reason why I had to definitely come all the way back home so I actually could feed the cats, make sure they had plenty of food, water, and change the cat litter and so forth. But anyhow, yes, of course, there's Gamers of Winter coming up in February, right? It's not
We
even winter yet,
are
it's fall, but prepare for it.
scheduled for the same venue.
Yep. It's gonna be awesome.
Love to see a bunch more people show up and do stuff.
Same here. And just to let you know, guys, I will repeat what I did last time. I will be, hopefully, I won't be using the, well, hopefully, the internet will figure that out a little better for some people. Hopefully, that'll be worked out before then.
I thought it was very good for a first try.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. We still got, I still have to get together with you for the camera mount thing.
Yeah, we can build something.
Right, exactly. That's why I said we have to get together about that. Obviously, that's not the case. We're not gonna get together right now. But anyhow, yeah, I will repeat the stream from Gamers of Winter that I did for Gamers of Summer, and hopefully we'll get another person to volunteer to help demo product, or hey, if you are a person who wants, hey, you want to be internet famous? I'm not sure you get internet famous, but if you want to play and have the game streamed live with me, I'd be happy to play you. Or hey, if you want to play your friend and have it streamed live, come to Gamers of Winter, and I'd be happy to have it all set up so you can stream it live. So I think that'd be great. I'm gonna do the same thing again, and learn my as I learn our lessons from last time, and I think it definitely will be a better overall product. So anyway, we're gonna wrap up with that. Doug, it's been a pleasure having you around. Always, always
Yay.
great to have you. Always great to have you here.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Okay, well, have a good night. So, friends, neighbors, enemies, something like that. I got to talk about the survey results and some thoughts about that. Obviously, went down the sidetrack of archery. Sorry. But obviously, got to talk about Starfleet Warlord, and I'm not sure if Starfleet Warlord interests you, and I'm hoping that at least gets it into your brain to maybe want to join up. Might want to play some Starfleet Warlord. Just to let you know, the place to go for Starfleet Warlord is not starfleetwarlord.com, though I do own that, and I gotta check to see what I did with that. Currently, the website actually is playbyemail.com. Sorry, play-e-by-e-mail.com. There's a whole story why I don't have play-by-email.com. There's a story behind that. But that's not for now. So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.